The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Doing that, I was face to face with it. It was holding me by my throat, and it felt like it was sucking something out of me.
I probably should have been more scared than I was when I witnessed the exorcism.
I turned and looked on my right side. When I did, there's a beam on the side of the tree, a large beam. It's looking at me, and I'm looking at it.
After I hit the lock button and looked back up, I saw red eyes staring back at me.
That they're going to show multiple gods all over the earth, be able to speak in people's languages, and at that point, it kind of converge into this one entity, which will be revealed as extraterrestrial. You'll realize that aliens are the gods of old, and at that point, it'll wipe religion out of the context of humanity.
No way, it couldn't have been a person, I know that. I know that people can't run through the woods like that.
So this thing comes into view, and I see it. It's 50 yards away from me. It's walking on two legs. It's huge. This is a big, hairy-looking being.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I am your host, Eric Szilagyi. If you've had an uncomfortable experience and you'd like to have it featured on the show, please get a hold of me at contact.uncomfortable@gmail.com. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, both at Uncomfortable Podcast 65. Most importantly, please share the show with others and make sure you leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you can. Those are the main ways you can help in getting the show out in front of more people, and with that, more people listening means more great guests coming forward with their experiences for you. If you haven't yet, make sure you hit up the Discord server. You can find the link to the server in the show notes. I've got some exciting announcements coming up here shortly, so keep your ears tuned in the coming weeks. We've got a great show for you tonight, so let's get into it. So if you will, please give a warm, uncomfortable welcome to tonight's guests, Oren Felix and Jenny Sutherland from the Framework UFO Research Center. Oren is the founder and the director of the center. We've got both of them here tonight, and I'm excited. We got some good stuff to talk about tonight.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having us. We're stoked to be here and thankful for the opportunity.
Well, it's my pleasure. Actually, you guys are the first to witness the new studio.
And, it looks great.
This is my first attempt at doing a video as well. So if you're listening to this on audio, by the time this airs, there may be a video out. If not, that means that I screwed it up in editing and it got trashed. So also, this is our first time using Riverside FM. So So far, so good. The video is great, and I'm thrilled to get into it. So tell me about the framework. Tell me about the UFO Research Center. What are you doing with it? What's the purpose for it?
Okay, so a little bit of background. I've always been interested in cryptids and aliens and weird stuff. And I'd say probably 2-3 years ago at this point, I had what I would call a recovered memory about a Men in Black experience I had as a kid. And that kind of really set me down a path of seriously researching and reading and looking into, you know, all things high strangeness and UFOs and whatnot. And the whole UFO phenomenon was kind of my gateway into all of this. And it didn't take me very long of digging below the surface to kind of realize there's a whole lot of stranger things going on and a whole lot of connections between these different paranormal and high strangeness type phenomena. And so just in my research and my reading, at some point I just started a Word document for notes, just kind of to keep my thoughts straight and for my own benefit. And, you know, at some point I was looking at this Word document and I've got 10,000 words worth of notes. It's like, I need to do something with this.
Sure.
So at that point I kind of started, you know, roughly working on the outline for a book, just like I said, kind of talking about these connections between aliens and cryptids and paranormal ghosts, that type of thing. And then so in the meantime, me and my partner, Jenny, we just kind of wanted to start going to conventions and meeting people and networking and telling our stories and talking to other people. And, you know, we've had a blast doing that. We've probably been kind of seriously doing that for about a year now. And we met the Cryptids of the Corn guys at one of these conventions. And
good guys and gal.
Yes. Yeah, they're great. But they kind of put us into contact with you. And that's where we're at now. So
that's awesome. Yeah, great, great guys. If you haven't listened to the Cryptids of the Corn, head over there and listen to their stuff. Completely different take on these kind of topics. It's more educational. It's more at times scientific, more at times biology based. Justin is he's a bright guy. We've got friends that call him the smartest man in the room. I take offense to that. no, he's a great guy. Jay and Emily, terrific people. Really, they were out at Bigfoot and Brews when I hosted that this past summer. Had a lot of fun with them. Spent the weekend with them at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference earlier in the year. And we drank a lot of moonshine and we talked about a lot of stories and had a lot of fun. They're great people. So.
Yeah, they are, and you know, they've put us in contact with a lot of cool people, yourself included, so we're really thankful to have met them. So.
Yeah, good guys, good guys. And that's actually where I saw you guys for the first time, was in a picture with them. So I think that was at the Virginia?
Yes, sir, Southwest Virginia Bigfoot and Friends. Yep.
Yeah, that was the first that I had seen of you guys, and just a week or two ago, they aired an episode with you?
Yes.
Yeah, we did a couple with them. I think my episode aired about a month ago, maybe, and then Jenny's aired a couple weeks ago, right before the holiday, I think, right? Yeah. So.
Well, Jenny, what's your part in all this?
Well, so basically, you know, I've got all this high strangeness I can talk about, and I will talk about, that was happening. But when it first started happening, I didn't realize what was going on. And I was like, are you seeing these things? And he said, I believe you. And I'd always been so frightened to tell these stories because people will think you're crazy.
Right.
And he absolutely believed me. So, you know, it all kind of just came together, because at some point in that, he had been reading a lot of books and talking and studying. And I was like, well, I want to learn this stuff too. And so, yeah, basically my part in the framework is that I'm the research assistant.
And, you know, with a lot of her experiences that she had as far as like shadow people and poltergeists and whatnot, you know, when she first told me about all this, we took it at very face value. And then as I got deeper into my reading and my research, I was like, oh, well, this might actually be this, and this might actually be what's going on. And it's kind of just all snowballed from there.
So is the framework, is that more than just UFO research?
Well, I started out, you know, very flesh and blood, nuts and bolts, extraterrestrials coming down in their crafts. This is misunderstood technology. There's a quote unquote rational explanation for all of this.
Sure.
And, you know, the deeper I got into it, I feel like it doesn't take very long for you to start seeing there's a lot more weird stuff going on than just nuts and bolts, flesh and blood. And I absolutely still think there's that aspect to all this. But, you know, at this point, I think cryptids and aliens and all manner of high strangeness are all connected in some way. You know, I don't claim to have any definitive answers to any of that and how it's connected, but like I said, the deeper I got digging into all this, I think there's a lot more going on than might initially appear on the surface. So the framework UFO Research Center is what I kind of called all this when I started it. And I think the name still fits because everything kind of is connected. And, you know, that's kind of what I want to do with all this is get people thinking about things in a different way and asking questions and looking at things in a way that we haven't just been programmed our entire lives to look at things.
With
and
I want critical people to, mind.
Yeah, exactly. And I want people to build their own framework. Mm-hmm. And that's why I named it that. So.
Yeah. And that's exactly what this show is about. I've said it countless times and I'll say it countless more times. It is about opening people's minds and letting you use your critical thought to see what fits, see what works for you.
Exactly.
What fits in your paradigm.
So. Exactly.
All right. Well, where can people find you?
So we are on Instagram, and that's at the Framework UFO. And we're also on Gmail, and that's the Framework UFO at Gmail. And please reach out. You know, we love talking to people and meeting people and sharing stories and whatnot. So if anybody's got anything they want to share with us, we're more than happy to hear it. And, you know, give us a follow. We'll follow you back. And just trying to meet people and bring the community together, if you will.
So are you guys using this as a opportunity to collect encounters, sightings, stuff of that nature?
You know, it didn't start out that way, but I'm sure, as you know, it doesn't take long for you, you know, to kind of become the weird guy at work or whatever. And if somebody has something going on, you know, they tell you about
You're
it. So, I said I'm weird. I'm the weird guy at work. But yeah, so it didn't really start out with that intention, but it's people have shared stories with me, like once they figured out I was into this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I just always like to throw that out there. Hey, we're always up for a good story. So.
Well, I like the people that you go up to and you're like, hey, you know anything about Bigfoot? You believe in Bigfoot? And they're like, no, you? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, well, and then someone overhears you. Well, and walks somebody, up.
Some, a buddy of mine told me one time he was out in the woods, and you know, it's like they test the waters, and then they find out, oh yeah, okay, he's weird, so it's okay.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Talk.
If they don't believe in Bigfoot, their brother-in-law has seen one or something like that. Yeah, that's exactly. Always the case.
All right, well, ladies first. Let's hear from Jenny. What have you got? I know you got some shadow people stuff, and I had an experience with one, very brief. It was when I was very young, don't know how old, but I know I was still sleeping with the hallway light on, so probably in the neighborhood of 5 or 6 or maybe 7, standing at the doorway to my bedroom, just standing there, like leaning up against the frame of the doorway. And the thing that I recognized about it was, so there's a light in the hallway. That light would have been behind this figure standing there. If it was my mom or dad, I would have seen at least some shading of clothing, you know, colors, something. This was just, I'm not going to say it was like blacker than black, like some people describe it. This was kind of like a smoky charcoal gray, and it was a silhouette. It was a full silhouette from what I can, you know, I mean, I guess when I close my eyes and I try to remember it, it was the head, shoulders, torso. Not sure if I remember seeing feet or legs or anything like that. But the thing that struck me was, you know, my mom was kind of a chubby, short lady with curly hair. And my dad was a pretty stocky gentleman that had a flat top haircut every day of his life. And this silhouette was not representative of either one of them. And I was an only child. There were only the three of us that lived in this house at the time. And I don't know who the hell it was. I mean, it was not somebody that lived there. And it scared the hell out of me. But then, you know, I closed my eyes and, you know, I kept them closed for a while. I don't know how long, but, you know, when I kind of peeked, it was gone. Now, I had a reading by Karen Tatro after we did an episode quite a while back, and she brought it up. This is something that I had never talked about. I never told my parents that I saw it. I used to like to watch Saturday night creature features and Saturday afternoon scary movies on the Chicago station that we would get. I was always filling my head with UFO stuff and Bigfoot stuff, and you know, if I was afraid if I told them that I saw that they would have been like, okay, that's enough, you're not watching that stuff anymore, you know, you're having nightmares. But it wasn't a nightmare. I till this day I can still close my eyes and see it. And she brought it up during a reading. She's like, you had a shadow person. And I was like, yeah, I did. And she said the weird thing about it was that she could not gather where it was from. She couldn't really read anything of it. She said it was there. It did not seem malevolent. It just was there in times when I was in question. Like when there was some kind of turmoil or I had decisions to make. I can't even imagine what that would be at 6 or 7 years old. But she's like, yeah, she's like, I don't ever run into this. She's like, I don't know where it's from. So I thought that was weird that she put that part into it. But that's enough about mine. Go on. Let's hear about your stuff. I'm fascinated by them because it was terrifying to see it.
Yeah. And I'm sure when you were that little and saw it, like you were just scared. And, you know, now that you have a little bit of information, like, oh, okay, that's what that was. But so, all right, well, we'll start from the beginning, and I'll try not to drag it out too long. But basically, I think this sort of stuff has been around me off and on my entire life. The first time I remember anything, I was probably, I don't know, around five or six. We moved into this new house, and my father worked third shift. So he was gone at night all the time. And this house was, it was dark. Like there was not a nice air to the house. Like I'm still scared of it. But we had at the time, this is from a child's perspective. And I had a little brother at the time as well. We had a ghost. This is what we called it. I now think it might've been something different, but we had a ghost. It looked human. And my brother named it David. So we all saw it, and it was very benevolent. It never hurt anybody. It just kind of hung out. But for a two-year-old to name something was quite strange. So anyway, so David lived with us for some time. And then just at some point, he just disappeared. So, you know, there was that. Also, somewhere around this time, my mom's sister, my aunt bought a plantation that had burned to the ground. This is in Georgia. I don't know if you can tell by the accent. This is in Georgia. So I know that place was haunted. That's the first place I ever saw a shadow person. There was one room. It was upstairs. It was like a dining room. And there was like a huge pantry situation there. And you would see things there. But these were the type of shadow people that you caught in the corner of your eye. You never saw it full on. So that place was always scary. At some point, I was telling Oren this story. Because it was a massive plantation, my aunt used to throw my little brother in the front of this truck, this stick shift truck from, I don't know.
I was like, she threw him in front of the truck.
No, I'm sorry, in the front seat of the truck. In the front seat of the truck.
Okay, all right, that's better.
And I was in, yeah, that story was going to take a really dark turn there. But I was in the truck bed, and she would get out and, you know, clean some stuff up and put it in the truck bed and drive a little bit and then do it again. Well, she was out raking and the truck just started moving. And, you know, everyone my entire life has been, well, your brother just, you know, kicked it into gear. You don't kick a truck like that into gear at 2 years old. You know, you just can't. So, you know, that was the weird stuff that happened there. So, also in the middle of these times, so David had departed, but my mom said that there was a centaur who began to visit her.
A centaur?
A centaur. And I know nothing about, like, mythological creatures visiting women. I do think it's odd that, you know, my dad was never there because he worked third shift. So I don't know if that goes into a little bit of, about women being alone, and she was alone with, you know, two small children.
Yeah.
And then a third child came along. So it's always kind of been the joke. Your daddy is a centaur. And just thinking about little kids.
What gave it away, the tail?
Yeah, around the dinner table, I'm like, did nobody look at this and go, wow, this is really, really strange. So that's pretty much the background story on the childhood. So also, this is the point where I'm going to insert this mirror. That it was a very old mirror. It was one of those that it was poured. It wasn't, it was old. And it was my mother's mirror. And then before that, it may have been my grandmother's mirror. But this mirror had been with me my entire life, maybe with my mom her entire life. So I've had this mirror. We're going to fast forward a little bit. We moved into a new house. My dad quit working third shift. All is fine in the world. We are good. I get a little bit older, get married. Nothing happens. We are all good. This mirror is still with me, but nothing weird. Okay, so fast forward.
Can I interrupt you for just a second?
Sure.
You said the mirror was poured.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot when it comes to mirrors, apparently. What does that mean?
You know how, like, very old mirrors, they... This is actually something that Justin from Cryptids of the Corn and I were talking about, how, like, these old mirrors, you can tell that they were manufactured before a certain year, because you can look at them and they're just not right. And I know I'm not using the right words for this.
Are you talking about the kind that when you look at it, they look a little tarnished and... Like, yeah, that's not super reflective in some areas and stuff.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yes. 100%. And I apologize. I don't know quite the words to describe this. I was kind of looking up these mirrors just for fun. and I think they're like a Chippendale sort. They're very expensive now, but anyway. No. Please ask anything you want to. So let's fast forward. I've gotten divorced. I have moved into a little beach duplex, which is, I don't think I should talk about that yet. Anyway, so I've got the mirror for the first time as an adult, single, alone person. I'm living alone. I'm right across the street from the ocean. So stuff starts acting up. I still haven't figured out that it's the mirror. So I had, at this point, I called it the ghost of Kurt Cobain because he had blonde hair and wore a flannel shirt. Oh. So this guy lived with me for a couple of years there, and he just lurked in the doorways. He didn't do anything, also malevolent. So at some point, I was telling this to Justin, and when I say Justin, I'm referring to the cryptids of the corn. He said, "Have you heard of the Flannel Man?" And I was like, "No, I haven't." But we discussed that a little bit and pretty much decided that that was probably a Flannel Man. And after hearing that, I almost think that David from when I was a little girl was also a Flannel Man. So I don't know. Interesting stuff.
And what did you guys find out when you started talking about, you know, what the Flannel Man is?
Well, basically, as much as I can figure out, it's just something that kind of comes during transition and liminal states, and it's not there to hurt you. Do you have anything to add to that?
I don't. I've heard of it. I've heard it mentioned in passing in other contexts. So I recognize hearing it as a thing, but I've never had any kind of explanation for it or you know where it's supposed to originate or why they're around.
Just in the little bit of research I've done about it, it seems like it's a relatively new phenomenon, and you know, these type of entities, it seems like, are just being reported in the past, you know, 10, 15 years. So I've had trouble finding, like you said, some real rock solid information about, like, it seems like people have varying theories about these things. So I've had a lot of trouble nailing down anything definitive in my research.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me because, you know, they've got to start at some point, right? Whatever kind of entity is in our mythology right now, you know, things that people have claimed to have seen for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, they started somewhere, right? So what's to say that something new can't have a beginning that is closer to, you know, when a lot of times when people talk about these things, and they say, well, it's just part of urban legend. And, you know, we didn't start hearing about these things until, you know, 15 or 20 years ago. And then all of a sudden they're here. Well, everything's got to start somewhere, doesn't it? You know, not everything could be from the beginning of time or the beginning of, you know, the first ghost or, you know.
And I also kind of wonder if we're basically dealing with the same types of entities throughout history. It's just how they choose to present themselves to us, or, you know, light spectrum type stuff, how we can see them. So, I mean, I think it's quite possible that these things aren't anything, you know, that we haven't encountered in human history before. It's just how they're choosing to show themselves to us.
Right. Interesting.
All right. So fast forward yet again. So this place I live there, you know, it was scary, and it was that was unfortunate because it had been a second home I'd had before, And I think it was J.J. Rose who was talking about how places change sometimes, like something could have been one way at some point and then becomes a different place later on. I feel like I heard her say something about that one. I think I did.
Very possible. Very possible.
Okay. So anyway, so this place was, you know, it just kind of was what it was. It was scary. So let's fast forward a few years. This is when I moved to Raleigh, and this is in 2016, and my father was dying of cancer. And I moved into this little apartment complex, and I never knew any history about the complex. There was a man-made lake literally in the backyard of it that, I jogged around several days a week or walked around. I spent a lot of time around this lake. So weird stuff, really, 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 really strange stuff started happening here. At first, it started with, okay, well, let me start with what Jenny did that was really dumb. So I took the mirror, and there was a fuse box that I thought was ugly. So I put the mirror, hung it right in front of the fuse box. So I've been told that I fed the mirror. At this point, I've made no connection with the mirror and the weird things that were happening.
Right.
Yes. So so things start happening out of this mirror. Like, and we're not talking about like out of the corner of your eye shadow people. We're talking about full on black, dense, just sitting up in the corner near the ceiling of the apartment, which I could see from my bedroom. So that was happening. And at some point, and I'm not sure when I did it, I did a little research on this apartment complex because I don't even know why I did it. But it was called Lake Lynn Apartments. And for anyone listening, you can Google this. In 2002, there was a woman named Stephanie Bennett who was brutally, brutally raped and murdered in this complex. And it wasn't a large complex. So, you know, proximity to where this happened, where I lived, it wasn't very far. And someone has pointed out to me, apartments are basically one building anyway. So I found out that that had happened. Still not really thinking a lot about it. But at this point, Orin and I had started talking about this because I said, I'm seeing these things. Do you believe me? And he said, well, I do believe you. And he actually did see it at some point. Mm-hmm.
So one night we were just laying in bed, and for some reason I just sat, you know, straight up in bed, just wide awake, and straight ahead in this corner of the kitchen was the traditional shadow person description, you know, a huge black humanoid shape. And I was terrified. There was no reason to be as scared as I was. Nothing happened. Just this thing was there, and that's the scaredest I've probably ever been in my entire life. And, you know, Jenny had seen them quite a bit at this point. She kind of, you know, talked me down and got me to, you know, get back in bed and try to go back to sleep. And at some point in the middle of the night, I don't know how long it was after the initial sighting, her phone screen just lights up randomly for no reason. There's no text, no call, no notification. The phone screen just lights up. And
like it'd been touched.
Yeah, like something either had interfered with, you know, the electromagnetic field. I don't know. But after that, I was definitely a believer if I wasn't before. So. Wow.
So, and then after that, there was all of this stuff started amping up. It started getting bigger and bigger. Like,
let me ask you, were there any interactions with these things? I mean, were they behaving in a in a fashion that was, you know, threatening, or were they doing, was it obvious to you that they were aware you were there?
I think so, because I definitely think it fed off my fear because it came back, but I've never thought about that. Maybe it was just there, because there was no interaction at this point with anything.
Okay. That so, doesn't sound yes. good.
Yes. So also during this time, as things started amping up, there started to be some, I would consider like poltergeist activity. I would wake up and I would hear beeping, and it was loud and like Morse code, like beep, 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 beep. And I would just, I was terrified. So I just listened to it. Now in retrospect, I wish that I had done something with that information, because I don't know what that was. And that happened, and stuff started getting moved around, like my dishes would be moved around. I would call him in the middle of the night and say, did you move this stuff around? Because now this is not the way it should be. And yeah. He was like, no.
Yeah, like trickster type stuff, like her hairbrush would end up in the kitchen cabinets or something like that. So just very typical poltergeist trickster type activity started happening too.
Is the mirror still hanging over the electrical box?
At this point.
Okay.
At this point it is. So we're going to fast forward a little bit, and then something started coming to visit in the bed. And I sleep on my stomach, so my story is not like of something that got on my chest and crushed me or sat on me or anything. It pressed on my back. It was very, like, it was very heavy. It breathed on me. I could feel it. It talked to me, even though it wasn't speaking out loud. It would have a full-on conversations, not quite the right word. I knew what its intent was. I think it was an incubus, because it did what an incubus does.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. Really? Yes. And I tried to bargain with this thing, and now in retrospect, I know I was literally feeding it what it wanted, which was fear, because I would bargain. I was like, if you will please quit scaring me, you can do anything you want. And it didn't help. The bargaining didn't help.
It was going to do it anyway.
Yeah. And I don't mean to laugh at it because it's not funny, but I was brought up incredibly overly religious. So I started, you know, quoting Bible verses and, you know, trying to rebuke it in the name of Jesus. And it didn't care. It did not care. So that went on until.
Okay. All right. Pause.
Yes. Yes.
Obviously a very delicate situation. What does that do to your mental state?
I
would have to assume that you would be at your wit's end and questioning sanity at every turn.
Absolutely. I didn't know anything. I didn't know the proper words for this at the time. I knew it was malevolent. I knew it was bad. I didn't sleep well for a very long time. It got to the point where I would wake up and have to cut on the television and the lights. And I would just lie there awake until the sun started to come up. And then, you know, fortunately at the time I was doing gig
DoorDash,
yeah, Grubhub, all that stuff. So I had the, you know, I was able to sleep some in the morning before I had to go deliver food at lunchtime. But no, I didn't sleep at night for a very long time. So yeah, it was bad.
You said it spoke to you, not out loud. I assume it was You were hearing it in your mind. And
yes.
Due to the nature of what it was doing, I'm not asking for you to relay what it said it was going to do, but did it ever give you an end game as to why it was doing? I mean, was there something that was going to come out of this that was to its benefit, other than just the act of copulating with somebody who still had a body?
I don't think that it ever had an end game, and I thought it might be slightly caused by what we were trying to do, you know, because we were starting to get into some paranormal stuff, obviously, because of what was happening, and we were trying to do some, you know, paranormal stuff together. But no, there was no end game. It made its intentions very clear, and it let me know that there was nothing I could do to stop it. So
that's got to be extremely, I mean, for both of you. I mean, one, Oren, you're, I assume, completely helpless. Your love interest is having to engage in something that is against her will.
I only saw the entities at one time, but, you know, as this progressed, you know, I get calls at, you know, 3 a.m, it's happening again. And so finally, it kind of just worked out that Jenny's lease was ending. And it seemed like once these, I don't know if the entities knew, but they're toward the past, what, like month that you lived in that apartment, it was just full on at that point.
Yes. And I didn't know about the summer solstice at this time. This is before I started getting into more of the esoteric side of things. But the summer solstice, this thing attacked me so brutally, and so it was, violence, not the right word, terrifying, like scaring me to the point where I didn't know how to get out of it, and I didn't know what to do to stay in it.
Were you experiencing like manifestations on your skin? Were you bruised? Was there anything visual happening to your body from these attacks?
I don't think so. I never looked. I bruise easily anyway, but I'm going to be very honest and say, like, I never saw bite marks or anything like that. So yeah, I want to keep the story true and honest. So,
one of, I suppose it was in the early mid 80s, there was a movie called The Entity. I don't know if you've seen that. If you haven't, I wouldn't recommend watching it because it might bring back some bad memories. But it was the same situation. And it was a woman who was being attacked and brutalized sexually. Repeatedly, and it's based on a true story. I don't know how truthful the film was to the occurrence, but in the movie itself, they actually had reproduced her home in a controlled environment, and were able to basically videotape the occurrences. And, I mean, I'm sure that part of it was probably for Hollywood, but at that time, for the age that I was in my mid late teens, that was a pretty terrifying movie. And I couldn't imagine, somebody actually going through that. Did you, forgive me for asking, but did you ever have to seek any kind of counseling or anything to get past that? And if you did, what was that like telling somebody?
No, I told him, and I really don't know how I think there have just been so many other, like, losing parents and stuff, that this just seemed like this is bad, but it's not as bad as that. So, no, I did okay. I was pretty much at my wit's end by the time, you know, this all happened. But I moved a month later. I moved in with him, and nothing has happened since. Nothing. Oh, and the mirror is gone.
Wow. That's terrifying.
So it's been pointed out to me that the mirror could have possibly been my anchor object, and then it just, you know, it acted up in times of stress and turmoil, and
Wow. But never any, like with the other shadow people and stuff, and this entity you just simply could not see, correct?
I couldn't see it. I never saw it. I felt it. It was really, really heavy, and I could feel it breathing on the back of my neck.
Would you say that the weight of it was similar to like an adult person laying on you, or
yes,
more than that?
Yeah. No, probably just like an adult. Like it wasn't where I couldn't breathe, but you know, like when it would try to manipulate my body, I could feel where it was putting pressure,
yeah,
and all. So yeah.
Wow. That's terrifying. Sorry you went through that.
And thank you.
Where do we go from here?
Well, but hey, the good news is that it stopped. And so, you know, that's been over 8 months ago. So,
this is all fairly recent.
Yes. Oh, yeah, this word. Was, yeah, the summer solstice of last year. And then I moved literally a month later, and I sleep now. Like, I sleep so well. I don't have to have the TV on or lights on. I sleep like a baby. So, I don't know.
Did you notice something like the moment you knew you never had to walk back in that place again? Was it something that was like profoundly apparent to you, or was it just like, oh my God, it's not here. It's not following me. It's not.
I would say so the first night that I was able to sleep, because we work, like I don't work second shift, but I go into work late in the day. He gets up very early, and there was some concern about, well, how am I going to stay up all night watching TV, and he's going to have to get up at 6:30 in the morning. And the first night I was able to go to bed like a normal person and sleep all night, I was like, we're good. This is gone. This is
I'm staying.
Yes, I'm going nowhere.
You're stuck with me. I'm staying. All right. Wow. I can't even. I don't. You know, I had a gentleman on a few episodes ago who apparently took part in seeking an online place that was basically to summon and secure a succubus and bind it to, I think he said, a couple of gemstones, and then sent those to them in the mail. Compared to your story, it's almost, you know, it's almost funny. Because this guy is just like, hey, you know, nothing happened. You know, I don't know why anybody would wish that. You got Tinder, you got Match.com, you got all kinds of dating sites. It seems like it would be safer. But where do we go from here?
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Well, I know that was a lot. I just laid down a lot there. But
well, you know, I mean, the inquisitive nature of myself, I want to ask questions, but they're not appropriate. You know, they're not things that, since you and I don't know each other, it's not something I'd be comfortable with asking you. It blows me away that, you know, there are people, and you're not the only one. You know, there's accounts of other people having this kind of stuff happen. And it just, honestly, you know, I've known a couple of women in my life who had been abused. And, you know, they had, and that was with a living person. That was with somebody that, you know, they saw. And they can't get past it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, maybe on your end, never having seen the perpetrator, maybe it was oddly enough better that you don't have something that you would have popping up in your brain as a reminder of what it looked like or who it looked like.
Well, you're not the first person who's wanted to ask questions, just to be honest, because I feel like people want to know, because I don't want to compare my situation to an actual human doing it, because I knew it was not human. I knew it was from somewhere else. I knew that, and my bargaining was never about, I'll just say it. My bargaining was never about sex. My bargaining was about fear. Quit scaring me. Just quit scaring me.
Yeah.
Because I can chalk this up to a dream if you'll quit doing that. You know, this could be masked as just a dream if you'll quit scaring me. So I don't know if that helps at all.
Well, I guess what I want to ask is, you know, was it threatening you with additional things?
No, it was there to do what it was going to do, and then it would leave. It didn't, no.
Yeah.
It was, no, no.
It almost seems, just from the accounts that you've told me, that, like, you had basically no autonomy, no control over the situation one way or the other. It just kind of, like you said, was there to do its purpose and then leave. And it's almost like you, the vessel, wasn't as important as the thing itself,
yeah.
is kind of the impression I got.
Yeah.
So it never just, like, collapsed into a heap beside you and wanted a spoon.
No. It was gone. It was gone after it was gone, until it came back. So yeah.
Was there any kind of indication that it was there? I mean, was there anything that indicated that it was coming into your area? Did you know, or was it just you felt?
I would be asleep and it would wake me up because it was just like pressing on me, laying on me. And then the breathing was always like, cause I could feel that so much. And then, and it wasn't sleep paralysis, because I was awake. Now, when I was asleep, I was asleep, but when it woke me up, I was awake. So, but no indication. I can't even really say like the air got cold in the room or anything like that, because I don't remember. So,
well, I'm glad it's done for you.
Thank you, Eric. I am glad as well. We are good.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that. That can't be something that's easy to drum up and talk about.
But you know what? This is the last thing I'll say. Like, when I figured out what it was, I searched every podcast on Incubus that there were and listened to all of them, because I think it's important to tell the story, because you're not alone. People,
right.
this whatever is going on is not, I'm not isolated in this. So,
and it seems to me like the accounts are pretty consistent across, you know, several podcasts and stories and whatnot that we've read and listened to.
Well, the part that you said that when it was done and it had done its thing and it was gone, and I think even you said that, you know, it's like it was there to do its thing and that was it. I've heard that multiple times. Yeah, that seems to be something that is very, it just comes to do its thing and then it's gone.
And when its time is up, it's gone as well. So,
and you had indicated to me before we started recording that you were actually thinking about somebody to reach out to as far as talking about this, and not surprisingly, you mentioned a name that has become pretty popular here lately.
Yes, JJ Rose 777. Did I get it right?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
So if you are interested, I can definitely set you up with the information to get a hold of her.
Okay. Well, when she just, I'm not using the right word, but blind red, telling you where this place, this portal was that you were interacting with, I was like, wow, that's really cool.
You're talking about the trip down to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was that solidified for me her legitimacy. I had already trusted her and was I was in her camp. I was mm-hmm. She's got something. But the events that took place on that trip down to Tennessee and the text messages that I received from her during specific things that were going on that only myself, Joel Thomas, Tony Merkel, Justin England, and Jay Frober from the Cryptids of the Corn, we were the only people there. There were no other people. There was none of them knew her. There was no information that was leaving that room getting to her. And there were a number of text messages that I got from her during that just floored me. So, yeah, I'm 100%. You want a legitimate person that can see that way. And, that's her. So
awesome.
I will get you her contact information here when we're done.
Okay. Thank you.
So is that pretty much it for you as far as what we're going to get into tonight?
That is for me. We can take a pivot and talk about something a little less
traumatic
and scary. There's lots more to talk about.
But we're going to stay in the genre of the dark and the black, and you have a pretty interesting experience with the Men in Black.
That's right. So, like I said at the top of the show, kind of what sparked my, real seriousness in researching and reading and looking into the paranormal as more than just something I was interested in, was what I would call a recovered memory I had. And, oddly enough, I was watching you know, just an Ancient Aliens episode, and they were talking about the Men in Black. And some story that they were telling on this episode, I was just sitting there like, oh my God, that happened to me when I was a kid. And so a little bit of background, I grew up in Eastern North Carolina across the river from a very large military base. It's called Camp Lejeune. It was built in the 40s, and we all know about all the strangeness going on in the 40s. The land for this base was seized by eminent domain. And then, you know, today there's some like toxic water class action lawsuit going on around this base.
It's on the TV 3 or 4 times a day. I see it. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's a lot of kind of just run of the mill strangeness going on around this base without getting into anything paranormal. But anyway, so where I grew up was, you know, literally across the river from this base. I mean, 200 yards probably. You could see the base. There was constantly helicopter activity. At night, there would be helicopters, you know, doing maneuvers and, I assume, you know, training exercises and whatnot. They would constantly shoot off flares at night. This was just something that was normal for us. We'd have people come over and visit, and, you know, they'd be terrified of these helicopters coming right over the house, and, you know, we didn't even notice it at that point. But anyway, so I was homeschooled when I was a child, and it was one day, probably late spring, early summer. It was the middle of the day, and it was just me and my mom and my sister were at home doing schoolwork. My dad was at work. And my recollection is just this standard white Chevrolet Astro van pulls up in our front yard. And, you know, I was probably 9 or 10 at the time, so I was old enough that I could have, you know, solid memories of this. It wasn't like I was 2 years old when this happened.
Sure.
And so my recollection is two men got out of this van. They had the typical, you know, black pants, black tie. I remember them having black short sleeve, or excuse me, white short sleeve dress shirts on. No jackets, but they did have sunglasses on. But, you know, this is summer in Eastern North Carolina. It's hot and humid. That could explain why they didn't have long sleeves and jackets on. But anyway, these two gentlemen get out of the car or the van, and they just start walking around the perimeter of our yard. They go down to the water. They look over, you know, across the river toward the base. They don't approach the house. They're just kind of walking around the yard. It's almost like they're looking for something. And at this point, my mom tells me, you know, take your sister, go into the bedroom closet, hide. If I don't come and get you guys in a while, you know, run down the road to your aunt's house and call somebody. So, you know, I do that, take my sister into the closet. At some point, I don't remember how long it was. It doesn't seem like it was a very long time. My mom comes and gets us out of the closet, and nothing is ever said about this ever again. Like, my mom didn't go into any detail about what happened. I don't remember asking any questions. You know, when Dad gets home from work that night, we don't, hey Dad, this weird thing happened today. It was an odd response to me looking back to what at the very least was just a strange thing that happened to us that day. So toward the end of my mom's life, she was battling cancer, and she kind of got more into esoteric woo-woo type stuff. And so I told her, you know, a lot of things about, like, Men in Black encounters and things like that. And actually, my father suddenly died very early on in my paranormal journey, I'd say. And so me and my mom are on a road trip to pick up my sister. And on the way back, you know, we were just talking about things, and I said, hey guys, I've got this thing I think I remember. I need to know if this really happened. And my mom was like, yeah, that absolutely did happen. And my sister, who would have been pretty young at the time, like 3 or 4, she even says she remembered this happening. So I don't know how much stock to put in that because she was so young, but my mom said, you know, this absolutely did happen. How I laid it out, she said, yeah, that's how I remember it happening. And I asked her, like, why did we never talk about this? Why wasn't this a bigger deal? You know, like I said, she had started getting more into esoteric and paranormal type things at that point. And, you know, she kind of jokingly not joked, well, I wonder if I got, you know, quote unquote, zapped by the men in black, because it does seem like everyone's response was not what would be expected for something that strange. And, you know, there's kind of two schools of thought as far as the men in black, these kind of John Keel otherworldly type entities. Sure. And this was not that. My, even as a child, I never had any inkling that these two individuals were anything other than flesh and blood human beings. Mm-hmm. So I think they were some kind of government agents. And after, you know, talking to a lot of people and telling the story on different podcasts, I've kind of come to the, I won't say realization, but my theory at this point is, I think that these agents were there to see what we could see that was going on the base from our property. Because there's a lot of weird things in my research, and just also living in this area on this property, I never encountered anything paranormal there, never saw any, you know, ghosts, cryptids, anything like that. But there was always just this overwhelming heaviness and fear. And, you know, I just always chalked it up to being just a dumb, scared kid. And I didn't realize till I moved away, everywhere else doesn't feel like that. There's a heaviness there. And, you know, even something as simple as an adult, I would come home and visit. And if I had to go get something out of the car at night, you know, you run just as quick as you can to the car. You take a flashlight, you run back. So just very oppressive heaviness in that area.
Ever go back to talk to anybody else who lived adjacent to you or neighbors and see if they ever had the same type of feelings that you did?
So this was actually a pretty rural, isolated area. My grandfather owned a lot of farmland in this area. And so the property that we lived on was like at the back of farmland. We didn't live in a neighborhood. I mean, we probably lived a quarter, third mile off of the road. So we were back secluded. I mean, there was, you know, fields and then a stretch of woods and then our house. So, I mean, we had no neighbors to speak of. And, you know, like I said, there was always the constant helicopter maneuvers and the flares and whatnot. And looking back, you know, when I was a kid, my parents would always joke, oh, the Marines are out there tonight shooting off flares. They must be looking for something. And now looking back, I'm like, well, what the hell are they looking for? You know, like things that I didn't even give a second thought to. Now looking back and, you know, not being in that area and with all my research and things I found out about, you know, kind of this general area and things going on there and talking to people, I think there's something strange going on there. So
can you, would you mind getting into a list of some of the things that you,
absolutely. I've got my bullet points here so I can go as long as you want me to. So kind of piggybacking off of everything I just said, this area also backs up to a national forest. It's called the Croatan National Forest. And when I was a kid, my dad would always take me mountain biking in this national forest. And prior to seeing Jenny's shadow person, that's the scaredest I was in my entire life. And like I said, nothing ever happened. I never saw anything. But whenever we would go mountain biking in this national forest, I was just terrified. And so actually this national forest is one of four in North Carolina. The other three, one of them is the Pisgah National Forest. And I don't know if you know anything about the Brown Mountain Lights.
Oh yeah.
That Brown Mountain is in this national forest, Pisgah. Oh. One of the other national forests is the Uwari, and there's, you know, all sorts of Bigfoot, cryptid, high strangeness report. I mean, there's, you know, a dozen podcasts I've listened to about strangeness in the Uwari. And then the fourth national forest in North Carolina is, I believe it's pronounced the Nantahala. And that's in the Smoky Mountains, which, again, you know, a lot of high strangeness, lots of Bigfoot-type activity. Also a hotbed for missing persons, missing 411-type stuff. So, you know, kind of this idea I'm workshopping is, you know, piggybacking off of the missing persons-type stuff. I wonder if these national and state parks and also military bases aren't chosen for their natural beauty or strictly their, you know, defense applications. I wonder if these installations and these parks are chosen because there's something there. There's some kind of energy. There's some kind of, I don't know, portals, ley lines, whatever you want to call it. I don't have the right word for it. If there's something there. And on top of all this strangeness, you know, since my parents died, my sister has spent a lot of time back at that property, and she's been experiencing a lot of strange poltergeist-type activities as well. And, you know, I almost wonder if, you know, there's this area, this place where the energies are right, the veil is thinner, it's a window area perhaps anyway, and then, you know, with the sudden death of both of my parents, we've had a lot of kind of family drama in the wake of all that. There's been a lot of negative energy poured into this place where there's kind of a lot of inherent strangeness going on anyway. And then, you know, just kind of talking to people in the area while all this has been going on, and I've kind of been digging into stuff. On the other side of this property, my grandfather also owned a trailer park, and there's a elderly woman that lives in this trailer park, and she would have her grandchildren come and visit periodically. And my mom told me this story one time, and she just kind of told it in passing, that in the woods in between this trailer park and where our property was, this woman's grandson said that she saw a big man running through the woods carrying something on his shoulder. And my mom just, you know, kind of said it in passing. But now, looking back at all this, I wonder what this kid saw. Yeah, I mean, he seemed like it wasn't just strictly a man, how he described it. And, you know, like I said, since my sister's been living there, it seems like the activity has amped up. And, you know, she's also kind of like Jenny was talking about in her story, a lonely young woman in an isolated situation. She called us, it's probably been a couple months ago now, late at night. She was kind of freaking out. She said she was laying in bed, was there by herself. It was just her and the dog. And she said it was like something just told her. It wasn't like a cognizant thought she had it. She said it was almost like the thought was beamed into her head, go look on top of the refrigerator. So she gets out of bed and goes and looks on top of the refrigerator. And she had these, you know, like decorative kitchen chickens, you know, like people have in their kitchens.
Yeah.
And she said there were three of these chickens, and the bodies had been ripped off of these decorative chickens, and it was just the three sets of legs on top of the refrigerator. And, you know, she sent us a picture of where these things were like glued on. It would have taken some work to just rip these things apart. And so, you know, we were kind of joking with her about, you know, that's some trickster activity. You're going to find the bodies of the chickens in the mailbox in a couple weeks or something like that. But, you know, she's just had a lot of strange things like that. She's got a relatively new car, but like several mornings in a row, she went out and the battery was dead. And this wasn't during times of extreme weather or anything, so she'd have to get her boyfriend to come and jump her car, and then it was fine. The last time this happened, when they went to jump the car, the like bracket that holds the battery in place was disconnected, and the wires were disconnected from the battery. And so obviously, you know, you'd have to get in the car to pop the hood to make this happen. And, you know, that kind of, to me, sent off red flags of, you know, high strangeness activity surrounding cars and car batteries dying and things like that. And around this same time, she came home one day, and on the front porch, she had just like a potted plant. And she said that the plant had been removed from the pot. All the vines and roots and whatnot were still intact. It had been set to the side, and the pot was just shattered. So it wasn't like a dog came and, you know, knocked over the pot. The plant was still sitting upright, and then it was just like the pot had exploded almost. And, you know, then just typical stuff like missing items around the house, things moved around. One morning she was leaving early for a flight and was packing up the car, and she said in the woods that backs up to the property, she heard this just huge thing running through the woods. She said, you know, it wasn't a dog. It was bigger than that. You know, we've had deer around this property. We know what that sounds like. And she said it was just huge. And then all of a sudden, it just stopped. So I don't know what exactly is going on there. I think there's something. I think it's quite possible this whole area is a window area, a place where the veil is thinner. But I'm at this point pretty curious to go back and do some more investigation and kind of see what we can turn up, because basically everything I found out at this point is just researching and talking to people. So we kind of want to get our hands dirty at this point.
Yeah. It's interesting, cause I listened to a gentleman on YouTube, his name's Steve Isdahl, and, he had a YouTube channel. It's called howtohunt.com. And, at some point, probably close to 2 years ago, maybe a little over that, he started reading people's sending in. It started off by people asking him if he'd ever had any kind of a Bigfoot experience, because he's out hunting and guiding all the time. And he just finally got to the point where he started reading these emails from people who have had Bigfoot experiences. And mm-hmm. I think he probably puts out a new episode twice, maybe three times a week. They're each around, you know, close to an hour. And all he does is basically read emails that people have sent in about their experience with Bigfoot and Sasquatch. And it gets a little old after a couple of years, but, you know, I still go back to it every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And the number of people that have had experiences or witnessed or actually were stationed at military bases who are experiencing these things, like even penetrating their borders, mm-hmm. you know, and especially military bases that have nuclear capabilities.
Exactly.
And it's a strange thing.
And, you know, I think kind of what's interesting about all this, I think it's kind of a chicken and the egg type situation. Are these things happening in these areas because the base is there, or is the base there because
right.
these areas were more susceptible for things to happen? Is the base there so the government can keep an eye on and try to control whatever is there so people don't fall into it? You know, and like you're saying about the nuclear installations and whatnot, that's kind of a thought I had in all this too. You know, all the reports of UFOs and whatnot around military and like you said, specifically nuclear installations, it seems like there's enough smoke that there's some sort of fire at this point to me.
Well, I don't know if you've gotten to the point of listening to the episode I did with Scott Tompkins. He put together the Bigfoot mapping project.
And, I don't think I've listened to that one yet.
He's got an Instagram channel or an Instagram page, and then he's also got a website that you can go to, and it sounds like he's doing some more stuff with the web page to make it a little more interactive. But basically, it's mapping of Bigfoot sightings fairly close to the time that they're being reported. So it's an interactive map, and he's done a number of different things where he'll overlay, the hot spots. He'll overlay mm-hmm. them in the state of Michigan. He did one where he overlaid it with heavily traveled hiking trails. And the correspondence between the two was pretty staggering. But I had talked to him and I said, you know, I'd love to do another episode with you. And I threw a couple ideas out at him. One was to try to overlay his maps with, like what you mentioned earlier, the ley lines that run through the U.S. I'd be interested to see, because they match up perfectly with cave systems, known cave systems throughout the U.S.
This is where I grew up, is in, you know, a very rural, on the water. So there's not caves, but, you know, just in some internet research, I found, I think it was just like through the U.S. Geological Survey or something like that. This was a government website. I found a map of, magnetic fields, anomalies, what have you. And there was a huge hot spot in this general area, this Croatan National Forest area. And then some of the other hot spots were, you know, like I said, the Uari and these other strange places. But piggybacking off of that, I think it would probably fall in line with all that kind of stuff.
I'd also be very interested to know, and I gave him a resource as far as being able to pull a map from it, was hot spots as far as UFO sightings are concerned. And just from taking his map of the Bigfoot hotspots and overlaying it with the map that I found without him doing any of the work, it's ridiculously accurate. So I'd like to see him do a map of military installations, and specifically isolate those that have known nuclear capabilities, mm-hmm. and see if those correspond as well.
And, you know, I don't know if there's ever really been a whole lot of reported UFO activity in this area. I've done some digging to try to find that. You know, there's a couple reports I found. But something that kind of just hit me while you were talking, like I said, kind of in my story, people from this area are so used to seeing planes and lights and helicopters. I wonder how much of this stuff is just going unreported because people just chalk it up to, oh, the base is at it again.
Right.
And that's something I'd never really put two and two together with till we were just talking. So another interesting point, I think.
You know, jumping back real quick to, the time when you guys were at that house and the Men in Black showed up. Was there ever any, did you guys ever come up with any feasible reason why they would have been where they were at? I mean, other than just trying to get a perspective of what you guys were able to see? I mean, did anything weird ever eventually pop up and go like, oh, man, that could have been?
So the only thing I can think of that we actually saw, you know, I mentioned about the helicopters would do all these nighttime maneuvers and they would shoot off flares. And I never really knew what a flare, the whole apparatus was. It's kind of like just this box that has like a parachute off of it. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, one of these things landed in our yard. There's pictures of me like playing in the parachute of this flare when I was a kid. So I never personally saw anything or heard about anything that they would have been looking for. I am of the persuasion at this point, I think they were trying to see kind of what our vantage point was and what we could see. Because, you know, like I said, it was directly across the water where all this activity was going on. And looking back and, you know, trying to recover more of these memories, it seems to me like they weren't actively looking for something as much as just kind of scoping things out.
Did they ever, do you remember, or did your mom ever tell you, did they ever in any way announce themselves, you know, produce any kind of paperwork or badges or anything to indicate who they were, why they were there? Did they have a cover story or anything that...
This is kind of another interesting thing I forgot to mention when I was telling the story. I asked my mom, I was like, so what happened after you sent us in the closet? Because my mom said she's going to go outside and, you know, see what's going on. She says she has no recollection of what happened at that time. She says she remembers, you know, the same thing I said, them pulling up in the driveway, her sending us into the closet, and she remembers coming and getting us. But she said she has zero recollection of what transpired between those two events. She said she doesn't remember.
Hence her saying, getting the flash from exactly. Will
she
Smith.
Said she doesn't remember talking to them. She doesn't remember them engaging with her. She had zero recollection of any encounter. But, I mean, it was my understanding at the time she was, like, going outside to, you know, confront these guys, basically, yeah. You know, what are you doing in our yard? And nothing. It's just like missing time at that point.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Very strange.
And on one podcast, I was telling this story. You know, somebody was just kind of joking, and they're, oh, or is it just Mormons pulling up in your yard? It was like, no, you know, we had the Mormons pull up, the Jehovah's
Church
Witnesses.
Church of the Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, like, this was definitely
Don't
not
run
that.
Run from your Lord.
Yeah, this was not that. So.
Go get in your closet. They're here to convert us.
Yeah, but so, you know, I don't claim to have any kind of answers about any of this. You know, this is just kind of some strange stuff I've come across, and this has led me down all kinds of bigger rabbit holes with, you know, the extraterrestrial phenomenon and cryptids and high strangeness and government conspiracies and how all this stuff might be intertwined.
You know, I love conspiracies. I do. But I rarely will talk about them on the show because so many people talk about conspiracies and you don't know the answer. You hear things that seem like they make sense, you know, mm-hmm. But we don't know.
And it's, a lot of that's a slippery slope, it seems like, too. I mean, you know, cryptids and aliens, that's fun stuff to talk about. But once you get down the rabbit hole with conspiracies and government stuff, that can get real dark real quick.
It can. And basically what you end up doing is, and that's something that I do not want to do with my show, is fear-mongering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can honestly lead people to being scared of things that you don't need to be scared about, or maybe exactly. We do because we don't know, but
it's not going to do us any good one way or the other. Whatever's going to happen is probably going to happen, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, Oren, Jenny, this has been a pleasure. I've enjoyed having you guys on, and it was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having us. We've had a blast. We're thankful for the opportunity to come on. You've been awesome to talk to. We hope to talk to you again and work with you in the future if you'd be interested.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love surrounding myself with good people and people who want to do good for other people. So that's another part of this show is I think I said this before we started recording. I am struck almost daily by how nice and how kind the listeners of this show are, and it's humbling.
Absolutely.
And it's just it's led me to a lot of great relationships, and you know, my days are filled with hearing from people, whether it's on Instagram or Facebook Messenger or some people that have my phone number and, you know, just shoot me a text, say, hey, how you doing, you know. And it's like, man, you don't have to do that, you know. And it's it just shows there's still a lot of good people in this world, even though we're dealing with a lot of not so good stuff.
And there's a lot of good people in this community. I mean, we haven't been doing this seriously for very long, but I mean, the amount of support and friends we've made has been really awesome. So we're thankful for everybody we've met and everything we've been able to do. And we're looking forward to meeting more awesome people like yourself and just doing as much work as we can and encouraging people to keep asking questions.
That's the big thing. Everybody, just use your critical mind. Think about things. If it doesn't make sense, it probably doesn't make sense. You know? And if you don't have enough information on it, it's pretty easy to get information nowadays. You know?
Yeah. So start you don't digging. Have to do a whole lot of digging before things start clicking into place, I think. Yeah.
And it's funny, you know, the whole thing, you know, we kind of laughed about it earlier in the episode. The commercials about the Camp Lejeune class lawsuits and stuff, you know. Maybe there's a little bit more behind that than what anybody realizes. So.
Absolutely. Who knows?
You know, maybe that's...
Yeah, it's at least something interesting to think about.
Maybe that's some shut-up money.
But, yeah.
Never know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excuse me. Oren, Jenny, thanks so much. Once again, The Framework, UFO Research Center. Let everybody know one more time where they can find you.
Okay, we are on Instagram, and it's at The Framework UFO. We're at Gmail, at theframeworkufo@gmail.com. And Eric, thank you so much for having us. Anybody out there listening, I'd encourage you, ask questions, look at things in a different light, and build your own framework.
Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, guys, that's it for this week. I hope you've enjoyed hearing from Jenny and Oren. If you did, don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating or review wherever you can and help share the show. Share it with your friends, share it with your family, and share it with coworkers. Put it on social media, however you can. Let's get this show out in front of more listeners. More listeners makes for more experiencers coming forward with their stories for you. And if you've had an experience or have a story that you'd like to have shared on Uncomfortable, please reach out to me at contact.uncomfortable@gmail.com or message me on Instagram or Facebook. And until next time, my friends, stay uncomfortable.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.